Radio Prague News.
The Czech Justice Minister will not, for the time being, appoint Lenka Bradáčová chief Prague prosecutor. The expansion of the Temelín nuclear power plant is a rational move, according to President Václav Klaus. And archaeologists in Přerov have discovered the foundations of a 17th century school once run by the philosopher Comenius. Justice Minister Pavel Blažek said on Friday he would not appoint Lenka Bradáčová chief Prague prosecutor. Ms. Bradáčová, who oversaw the corruption case of former prominent Social Democrat politician David Rád, is considered a champion of anti-corruption efforts in the Czech judiciary. Mr. Blažek's predecessor Jiří Pospíšil, who was dismissed last month, was going to appoint Ms. Bradáčová to the post, and some observers noted his dismissal was a move to prevent getting Ms. Bradáčová appointed. Justice Minister Pavel Blažek said he would fill the position of chief Prague prosecutor in a regular competition. The Czech Senate on Friday rejected a bill aimed at promoting foster care and reducing the number of children in institutional care. The draft legislation prepared by the government would professionalize foster parenting and increase foster parent salaries. However, some senators warned the bill could destroy the current system of institutional care and commercialize foster parenting. The bill will in September return to the lower house, which can overturn the Senate veto. During his visit to the Temelín nuclear power plant in southern Bohemia on Friday, President Václav Klaus said the plant's expansion was a rational move. Mr. Klaus dismissed objections to the planned construction of two new blocks at Temelín and said all Czechs should appreciate that the plant was an extraordinary achievement of the country's industry. After visiting the plant, the president praised the state-owned energy firm ČEZ for the preparation of the expansion and said the company has to make sure the project does not exceed the cost of 300 billion crowns. Direct foreign investment in the Czech Republic reached 26.3 billion crowns in the first quarter of this year, which represents an annual growth of 51%, according to data by the Ministry of Industry and Trade released on Friday. The bulk of the investments came in the form of reinvested profits, the ministry said. Czech firms' investments abroad amounted to nearly 9 billion crowns in the first 3 months of 2012, which was 39% more than in the same period last year. Archaeologists in the eastern town of Přerov have discovered what they believe are the foundations of a 17th century school once run by the Protestant philosopher and educator Comenius. The head of the archaeological research at the sites, Zdeněk Schenk, told the news agency ČTK on Friday that two rooms had been discovered so far, including one with an original floor. According to historical sources, Comenius first attended the school as a pupil before returning to teach there between 1614 and 1618. Czech football clubs Viktoria Plzeň and FK Mladá Boleslav won the first leg of the Europa League second qualification round. Plzeň beat Metalurg Rostavi 3-1 in Georgia on Thursday night, while Mladá Boleslav beat Iceland Stor Akureyri 3-0. The second leg fixtures are scheduled for next week. Meanwhile, the Czech football champions Liberec, which beat Shakhtar Karagandy 1-0 in the Champions League second qualification round on Wednesday, will face Romania's FC Cluj in the third qualification round. And finally, a brief look at the weather. The weekend will be mostly partly cloudy with rain in places and daytime highs around 22 degrees Celsius. My name is Jan Richter and that's the end of the news.
You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Thomas McEncrow, and in today's program, Dominik Jun reports on the opening of a branch of the Aspen Institute in Prague. We will also give you the latest business news, and in today's arts, we talk to one of the organizers of the Karel Nepres retrospective at Dots Gallery in Prague. And as usual, we will end the show with Pavla Horáková's Czech lesson. So do stay tuned. Thursday saw the ceremonial opening in Prague of a new branch of the US-based Aspen Institute. The ceremony was attended by numerous former foreign ministers from around the globe, including former US Secretary of State Madeleine Albright. Dominik Yoon reports.
The Aspen Institute was founded in 1950 as a non-profit organization dedicated to seeking out leadership and fostering dialogue on crucial issues of the day. It has branches across the globe, and the latest edition in Prague is designed to provide a crucial forum in the Czech Republic and across Central Europe. Former US Secretary of State in the Clinton administration, Madeleine Albright, who was born in Czechoslovakia before moving to the US in 1948, was in Prague on the occasion of the opening. She spoke in her native Czech.
Tak jsem moc ráda, že jsem tady a taky, že můžu být tady v tomhle momentu, když vlastně zakládáme Aspen Prague, protože pro mě je to hrozně důležitý.
I'm very glad to be here, especially to be present at such a time as this when we are founding Aspen Prague. For me, this is very important because I work in the Aspen program, and for a long time we thought that it would be great to have an Aspen Prague here in order to undertake regional work. Prague is really a center for so many things, and I'm delighted that the former ambassador to the United States, Michal Žantovský, can serve as chair and that we can work here together. We will come more often as a result. So once again, I'm delighted and congratulate everyone for managing to put this organization together here.
Momentu mě opravdu moc těší a gratuluju všem, že to jsme dali do pořádku tady.
I spoke with Radek Špicar, the director of Aspen Prague, about the new centre and began by asking him why such a place was opened.
So there are Aspen Institutes in Tokyo, in New Delhi, in Paris, Berlin, Rome and other cities, and some people had an idea that it might be an interesting option to get Aspen also for the Czech Republic, for Prague. We were asked not to focus solely on the Czech Republic but cover a broader region, and in our case it will be the four Visegrad countries. So we'll be focusing on Poland, Hungary, Slovakia and the Czech Republic.
Špicar also noted that in the spirit of the organisation, to be bipartisan and non-ideological, both Social Democrat and Civic Democrat politicians serve on its board of directors. He also noted the contribution of Madeleine Albright to the organisation's existence in Prague.
Madeleine Albright has been extremely helpful before the establishment of Aspen Institute. She's also a member of the Board of Trustees of Aspen Institute US, and without her help, I can hardly imagine that it would be possible to establish the Aspen Institute in Prague. And she came together with 20 former foreign ministers because they meet at least once a year within a project called Aspen Ministers Forum. So we basically combine our launch conference together with Madeleine Albright's Aspen Ministers Forum.
So what exactly are the aims of Aspen Prague and how will it carry out its mission of seeking out new leadership? Radek Špicar again.
First of all, we will proactively look for young leaders, and it is important to say not only in politics, for example, or business, but also in arts or sport. And at the same time, we'll be open to their application and to their interest. And it's already happening as the Aspen brand in the Czech Republic is getting known. People send their applications to be sent to Aspen, Colorado. People would like to work for us, etc., which is great.
And that was Dominic Kuhn with that report. And since it is Friday, let's have a summary of this week's business, for which I'm joined by Christian Falvey.
The government has been forced to admit that prior deficit reduction plans will have to be revised in light of the ongoing gloomy economic outlook. Former plans envisaged a reduction of the budget deficit to 0.9% of GDP by 2015. Under the revised plans, that figure has been shifted upwards to 1.6% of GDP, according to data released on Thursday. Meanwhile, this year, the deficit is set to also be revised upward from 3% to 3.2%, while the forecasts for the years 2013 and 2014 have also been changed.
And in related news, the Czech Ministry of Finance has also conceded that the economy will not grow as fast as had previously been forecast. Indeed, according to new data also released on Thursday, GDP will contract this year by 0.5% and grow by 1% next year. Previous forecasts issued this April predicted 0.2% growth in 2012 and 1.3% growth in 2013. In 2015, growth is forecast to hit 2.7%. The Czech Republic is technically currently in a recession, with three quarters of negative growth, contracting 0.8% in the first quarter of this year. Less economic activity means fewer tax receipts for the state, and this is then reflected in increased borrowing. The government is in the midst of an austerity programme which has seen tens of billions of crowns cut or frozen in key programmes.
The international ratings agency Moody's affirmed the Czech Republic's existing A1 rating this week, which is a comfortable investment grade in the company's assessment scale. The company also affirmed the country's stable rating, noting that fiscal consolidation programs were underway and risks of being affected by a euro-related contagion had hitherto been contained. In its assessment, Moody's also noted that the government had successfully beaten its 2011 forecast for lowering the GDP budget deficit of 4%, achieving a figure of 3.1%, but also warned over the current weakness of the economy, with medium-term concerns over the ability of the country to return to sustainable and viable levels of growth. On another plus side, the banking sector was signaled out for praise, described as liquid, well-capitalized, and well-insulated from volatility in financial markets.
Czech pencil maker Kohinoor Hartmut is set to purchase the propane and butane selling company Vitogas CR from French owners Rubis, according to reports. The purchase will be made by Kohinoor Holding, of which the pencil and art supplies producer is a part. In 2007, the holding group acquired a plant called Ponas, which makes thermoplastics in the town of Polička and also the Bulgarian school supplies company Hemus in the Bulgarian town of Burgas. Details regarding the Vitogas CR purchase have not been revealed, but estimates suggest it may have come to several million crowns. Prior to being owned by Rubis, the company was owned by oil producer Shell. Commenting on the purchase, Kohinoor stated that it was providing the company with a fourth leg. The acquisition must still be approved by Czech anti-monopoly authorities.
The Czech Waterways Directorate, a state agency that oversees and manages Czech waterways infrastructure, is commissioning a 6 million crown study to determine the viability of building a massive new canal connecting three major rivers. The plan, which has been under consideration for more than 100 years, would connect the Danube, Odra, and Elbe rivers. The staggering project would require the digging of almost 400 kilometers of canals in the east of the country from Poland all the way down to Austria, as well as a west-winding canal traversing towards Pardubice. The aim would be to create new shipping lanes to assist in commerce. The study will seek to determine whether such a project is feasible and its potential environmental impact. Aside from the hundreds of billions of crowns such a project would be estimated to cost, protests have also been raised about the land acquisitions which would have to take place in order for construction to commence.
And just a reminder that you are with Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio, where it is now time for our weekly dose of Czech culture in another edition of The Arts with Jan Wellinger.
In this week's Arts, I talk to Markéta Stará of the Dogs Gallery in Prague about the retrospective of work of one of the greatest 20th century Czech artists, Karel Nepraš. The show features many of Nepraš's famous metal works, but also drawings and pieces in porcelain. It comes highly recommended. Markéta Stará told me more.
This exhibition has been organized as kind of a celebration of 10 years after his death. And I think it was somehow necessary to create a certain amount of time to somehow have the possibility to digest all his work, put it together, bring the drawing inside, and create a coherent retrospective, which I believe this show actually really is.
We'll talk about details, of course. One of the first things that I want to bring up, you mentioned sculpture there. Do you think that Nepraš is better known for his 3D works, for his works in metal, than for his drawings?
I would definitely say most certainly, and I actually think that what he's most known for works mostly from the, let's say, 80s, 70s, and the 60s, where he applies a lot of red color. Frequently people forget that he's been also working with other materials such as porcelain, ceramics. So I think this exhibition actually presents that quite well. It shows that his work was on many levels very heterogeneous.
Thematically, the drawings reinforced the sculpture and vice versa. What were themes that they shared?
You know, what the drawings, I think, show quite well is the anatomical aspect of Nebrasch's work. This goes, of course, for his sculptures, where he's been kind of exploring the human figure, working with organic form, the veins, and so on. But you can also see kind of the stripping of the body, the raw material in the drawings. And in the exhibition, you can see it quite well set side by side. We really try to put an emphasis on that.
I think I read a Yaroslav Angel quote somewhere that one of the keys, or if not the key, to understanding Nebrasch's work is through humor. I wanted to ask you, what kind of humor did he employ?
Well, I think in relation to Karol Nebrasch, it's always important to speak about the grotesque. This is something also somehow very specific to the Czech environment. He's definitely one of the biggest protagonists of this type of humor. It's a type of humor which somehow makes you laugh, but then it literally freezes your face. It's a contrast of humor and very kind of sinister, dark humor, which creates goosebumps in many ways. And of course, it's very easily related to what has been happening during the period. Although you can see that even after the revolution, he didn't leave this field, and there's this dark humor is always present in his work.
Indeed, he began and lived through some of the darkest periods in Czechoslovak history, first the 50s, the Stalinist years, then there was the political thaw of the 60s and cultural thaw that came, and again normalization. So I suppose it's impossible to separate his work from a good measure of harassment, in fact, that he suffered under the communists.
Always somehow resembles, you know, the situation that he's, of course, been immersed in. This goes for his sculptural work, where in the 50s his work was slightly on the abstract edge, but already then you could see an inspiration by Kafka and existentialist. You can see the urgency of the political situations a lot in his drawings, as well as in his later sculptures, such as, for example, the dialogue, which, you know, how he treated the human figure, the subject of the dialogue in general, somehow the possibility of speaking in a metaphorical level. There's this impossibility of speech, impossibility of expression, and the external force, which somehow crushes the human and his soul and his being. It's, I think, very, very prominent in his work, but also he's been part of the Krzyżownicka Szkoła, which was somehow not an art collective. It was more of a kind of group of people who were frequently dissidents in opposition to the regime. They weren't, as Nebrasch, of course, able to create work, officially exhibit, so they've spent a lot of their time kind of organizing events, sitting in pubs. The pub is a kind of very big thing for Nebrasch's work. It's a place of, in a way, of freedom, of exchange, and this is exactly what the Krzyżownicka Szkoła was about. It was about people, not only artists, but also philosophers, dissidents, musicians, teachers, people who kind of shared a certain understanding of what life could or should be.
How did life change for him after 1989? I know that he became a professor at AWU. Sopko was there. Knijak played an important role in clearing out the old guard at that school. So to your knowledge, was that a fulfilling role for him then, to pass on his experience to the new generation?
I honestly believe that he was glad to join the academy, have, in a way, maybe, you know, have the freedom to produce art. But I think that's how, of course, my personal perspective. I don't think he was that concerned with the politics of the education, as he was more with the students. And that was my feeling that I got from kind of going through the materials and looking into his work slightly deeply, that was more about interaction with the students rather than a certain political play.
Do you think that his role or his importance in any way has diminished over the years, or that he is, as an artist, that his significance, if anything, has grown?
To be honest, I think because he didn't really have that many big exhibitions in the 90s, and really this is a first show of this size, focusing on his work, bringing all the work, trying to bring it all together and create somehow a context. I believe that it will grow now. I think he's not going to be, he was not, of course, not forgotten, but I think he was maybe more appreciated within the context of what he produced in the 60s, the 70s, and the 80s under the oppressive regime, rather than what he's been producing as an artist later on. And I think now people are going to have the possibility to appreciate all of that and maybe create a deeper understanding of all of his work. I think definitely something not to omit is his era, which is the abstract era inspired by Informal, where you have the castle piece inspired by Gasca. I think that's a work that should not be omitted because it creates a perfect understanding of what he's been doing at that period. Then I think it's really, really vital that people have a look at the different heads, which are inspired by his fascination by puppets, because that creates a, more of an understanding how actually he transferred from the head to the figure. Then, of course, the dialogue. Then I think please rotate. This is the part of his practice where he started focusing on the machine. And then from the later works, I think it's important to look at works where he gradually returned back to porcelain and ceramics, which was something that he actually studied as a student before he went to the Academy of Fine Arts.
That was The Arts with Jan Wellinger. And since we are nearing the end of our show, it is time for an episode of the ABC of Czech with Pavla Horáková.
Hello and welcome to Radio Prague's Czech learning series, Czech by Numbers, in which we explore numbers in the Czech language and their use in everyday speech. Today I'm here with
Daniela Lazarová,
and she'll help me through lesson number 8.
Lekce číslo 8.
As you have just heard, the Czech word for 8,
8,
sounds nothing like the English. However, it's very similar to its equivalents in other Slavonic languages. The figure of 8 is
osmička.
And the word is used in the same way as in English, for example, in figure skating. In a different sport,
osma
or
osmi veslice
is an eight or an eight. But back to
osmička,
a figure of eight. The word is also used to describe a wisdom tooth, because it's the eighth tooth from the middle. The ordinal number eighth is
osmi
for the masculine,
osma
for the feminine, and
osmé
for the neuter gender. The expression
osmý div světa,
the eighth wonder of the world, describes something extraordinary and novel. An eighth, as in an eighth part of a whole, is
osmina.
In music,
osmina
means an eighth note or a quaver, a note played for one eighth duration of a whole note. The word
osminka
is the diminutive form of
osmina,
but means the same. If you ask in a shop for
osminka másla,
literally an eighth of butter, you will get a 125-gram cube of butter, an eighth of a kilogram. And that's it for our lesson number 8.
Osmá lekce.
We'll be back next week with all you need to know about the number 9 in Czech. Till then,
nashledanou.
And that was Pavla Horáková with another Czech lesson, which we are currently rebroadcasting. And this, I'm afraid, means we have come to the end of today's programme. You'll find us at radio.cz, and should you like to contact us, our email address is english@radio.cz. We will certainly be happy to hear from you, as always. This is Thomas McEncrow saying thanks for listening, and have a nice weekend.